And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-host, and with me today is Matt Smith. In this episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, Matt breaks down the Birmingham City loss for Fulham from a coaching perspective. Along with that, at the end of the show, we're going to be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Burton Albion. This will be our preview for that match. So if you do want to listen to a preview, please check out the end of the show. We have much to get through, but before we get going, I always have to welcome back Matt to the show. Matt, welcome back to the Coaching Corner, my friend. How you doing?
Good to be back, Russ. It's been a couple weeks, and obviously we've been a couple crazy schedules for both of us with my season getting started and everything getting started with you with everything else. But good to be back. Obviously, never want to be back on the day after a loss. But it's good to get to do both sides of it, not just be the fair weather fans whenever we get wins, but we also got to deal with the losses and see kind of why it happened, what happened, and how we move forward.
That's exactly the reason why I love doing the show with you, because it's not just about the good times. You can learn things from a victory. You certainly can learn a great deal from a loss, and that's kind of what we're going to do today from a coaching perspective. What can we learn, and how can Savisa fix it moving forward? What does he need to do in these upcoming matches? What will he learn from that, from this unfortunate loss? It's a loss. Fulham, at some point, we're going to lose, so they've now lost. What can we learn from it? So let's start here. Just give me your overall thoughts on what you watched. You watched the match live. So what did you overall see in this match and this loss for Fulham against Birmingham City?
Well, I saw a very well-coached team in Birmingham. Coming off a week off, they had a long time to prepare for us. You could tell that it was a big match for them, us being unbeaten on the season and, going away and having to come in and execute a game plan. And I thought they did very, very well. I think that the one thing that we saw, and we'll probably talk about it a little bit later, is this is probably the first time that I saw that we really got outmatched athletically. I think the whole season, thus far, I think on the day we've been the more athletic team. And I don't think that was necessarily the case. I think they gave us a lot of trouble, with their athleticism, especially up front. We struggled to kind of cope with that, especially, after the sending off, we struggled to cope with it. And obviously didn't give up a goal out of the run of play, which is still a very, a very positive thing to take out if you're Slavisa, something you're going to take out of it. But, pretty disappointing that we couldn't develop more chances than we did. You're never going to go through a season undefeated, especially in the championship. It's one game, and, Birmingham are going to be a top team. You're definitely a top, battling for a top six place, I think. It's definitely in the top 10. I think that we've got to be able to take this on the chin and realize that, maybe scouting reports are out on how to defend us and how to stop what we like to do. And now, I think what you do is typically as a coach is you learn more from a defeat than you do from a victory. So hopefully that'll be the case. And we can learn how to play against teams who are going to try to stop us the way Birmingham did.
Okay. Very, very good take there, Matt. What's interesting is that we're going to break this down and get your observations on the attack and the defense. What's interesting about doing this show with you now, I just did a post-match show and I shared quotes from both managers. And I think the managers played a huge role in this result here. Savisa on one end and then Gary Rowett on the other end. And I mentioned to you off air that Gary Rowett, in his quotes after the match, Andrew Rayburn, from West London Sport, had an article where he has these quotes, and basically, the opening line from Andrew's article was, Birmingham boss Gary Rowett said, starving Tom Kearney of space was the key to their victory at Fulham. So definitely keep that in mind when you go through your observations on the attack, because I think that was a factor. But I think game plans, execution of their plan, you talk about this team being athletic, I think it all played a role. So let's start here. Let's talk about Fulham's attack, which was lacking in this match. What did you see, and how much did the tactics of Gary Rowett play a role in Fulham not being able to attack as well as they have in the past?
Well, I think that he and his backroom staff got it spot on. I think Kearney has been a big part of our attack, and I think that They did a great job of shutting him down. I think the hard tackle on him that happened very early on the match kind of was a statement of intent of how they were going to deal with him, and close down his space and not allow him to have the creativity and the freedom to be able to develop attacks. And when you play Matt Smith and up front and he wasn't able to get a lot of the service that usually we're fortunate enough to get with him. It's always going to be a tough day, but I think that they put us under so much pressure, basically all over the pitch, that it was really hard to get anything started. And even though our passing percentage was pretty good, if you look at the statistics, it was pretty good. We did have close to 2/3 of the possession, but what we did with the possession was not very, not at times not effective at all, and most of the time was basically kind of neutralized. So, they came in and did what they had to do, and to say we were out coached is one thing, but it's the first time anybody's really taken that kind of tactic against us. So you can't really say that they necessarily out coached us, but they did a very good coaching job of executing their game plan and bringing together a game plan that would be very effective against us.
Okay, and going into that, what's interesting is I was expecting, I heard a quote from Gary Rout before the match saying that they weren't coming to Fulham just to counterattack, that they weren't just going to be sitting back. And what's interesting is they did sit back at times, but when I look at how we attack compared to how they attack, Matt, this is what I want to get from you. They picked their spots, and when they picked their spots, they were going with pace and with intent, and they were after it from the get-go. Like you were saying, they were in our face the entire time, and when they had their opportunities, they pounced.
Right, and I think that not only did they not give our midfield time and space, but they also didn't allow our backs to get forward. They really pressed them high up the field, and they, Dennis Odoi had a tough day as well, and they were able to kind of neutralize him. And whereas usually he's bombing up the wings and getting a lot of crosses in and being dangerous, I think that they were able to really press higher up the field, and not necessarily in terms of Pat, pressing all the way up into our defensive third, but their line of confrontation was much higher than some other teams we've played, and allowed them to, when they won the ball, they were counterattacking from the midfield. They weren't counterattacking necessarily from their defensive third a lot. They were winning the ball in the midfield and being able to counterattack from there. And that's how the red card happened. They caught us flat, and they, from a very quick counterattack, Matt had to make a challenge that I think he has to make. Unfortunately, he was deemed to be the last man back, which can be debatable. I thought a lot of the credit I think goes to Birmingham as compared to the fault of ours, but we've got to be able to adapt to that. We've got to be able to have other players step up to take the reins when they try to take away maybe our most creative player and the player who's been most important to us in terms of starting and creating attacks.
So let me ask you, when they're taking away Kearney, and this is from a coaching perspective, because we're going to talk about coaching situations, trying to figure a new way. And of course, like I mentioned, we're going to talk a little bit later about the situation to take off Johansson and bring on Jofabed. But as a coach, when you see that something needs to change, when you watch that match, what would you have done when you saw how difficult it was for us to really get the ball to the players, to our offensive players?
I think what I would have done is I would have asked Aluko to be very a lot more proactive in terms of receiving the balls off our back line as compared to Kearney. Having Kearney clear the space and having Aluko get on the ball, playing that kind of withdrawn, kind of in the number 10 role and trying to find the balls off the center backs and things like that so that he can create, because he's a very creative player as well, in terms of forming attacks. But then in terms of building out of the back and stuff like that is – also, you ask Kearney to be kind of a secondary role player, and you ask McDonald and Aluko to really kind of, develop attacks and things like that. And so I think what you've got to do is you've got to find those other players in the middle of the field that can be creative and keep the ball and switch the point of attack and you know, just basically find other options. Don't be a, you know, you can't be a one-dimensional team in the attack. I think Aluko is very, very good when he gets the ball, especially when he gets the ball and can face up and run at people. And I think that probably what we didn't do enough of is find McDonald. I think we were still looking for Kearney out of the back, and to get McDonald on the ball and then for him to link up with our forwards and to create attacks like that.
No, very good point there, Matt, because, you know, when another team takes away a key for you, which in this case is Kearney, you got to find another way. And they struggle with that, and that's what's interesting, and that also shows they struggled so much that Savica decided to make a change in the first half. You know, he must have felt that way as well, because why else make the change? All right, Matt, let's now, before we get to the coaching decisions, let's now talk about the defense. What are your observations that you saw in this match from the Fulham defense? Where did it go wrong?
Well, again, just the athleticism. You know, just the athleticism up front. You know, I think that you know, we were really caused a lot of problems with Donaldson, especially, I thought, you know, really running at our defenders. And, you know, I thought they just did a very good job of you know, taking advantage of maybe, you know, maybe a soft underbelly of ours is that we don't have, you know, our outside backs are very athletic, but I don't think that our center backs necessarily were up to the pace of a Donaldson and the other guys up front. And, I thought that they did a very good job of finding those players and counterattacking it at times and getting into gaps and not playing. You know, a lot of times when we're very good defensively is when we can really keep players with their backs to goal and not let them turn and things like that. But they did a very good job of playing off the shoulder and in the gaps of our back line and you know, finding ways through and I think that's obvious. I mean, they had 25 shots and, you know, but. You know, but to be able to take people on and I think both penalties I'm not sure you can really argue with either one of them. And I think that's just a product of them not being afraid to run at people, get inside the box to where defenders have to make a decision and being very deceptive and forcing us to step in and make a challenge. And they were just athletic enough to, you know, put us in a position where we gave up penalties. But, you know, I think overall, I mean, if you really look at it, you know, again, we didn't give up a goal out of the run of play. I think this is a game that, you know, probably in the past couple of years, we probably lose this game 3-0 or 4-0.
I agree.
You know, with all the pressure that they put on us. So I actually think that there's a lot of positives that you can take from this because we didn't give up a goal out of the run of play. Even as many shots as we had, you know, 8 shots on goal that they had and 25 overall. That's, you know, I know that's not a high percentage. It's about 33%, but. But still, just having that pressure on your goal and yet not only, you know, only giving up one and that being a penalty, and their second penalty for that fact, you know, I think it's something pretty positive. So, you know, I yes, they were successful, but really, I mean, if you look at it, you know, except for the one penalty that they converted, you know, it very easily could have been a nil-nil match.
No, very good point there, Matt. I want to go back to the second situation that led to a penalty. This goes back to the aggressiveness of Birmingham City. We're trying to play the ball out the back with Button, and he's being a little cute there, and that started the whole problem. And then, you know, they intercept the pass. And this is them being aggressive. This goes back to a team coming to Craven Cottage and being aggressive against us. The one thing about this, you said that you could see why this was called, but I actually looked at it a few times, and I slightly disagree. This looked like Ayite and a player going for the ball. Now, I understand why it was called, but I could see why it might not be called. Do you see where I'm coming on this? It looked like to me that they were just fighting for the ball, and the player, I thought, went down fairly easy. So am I wrong to look at this and think that in some cases maybe this wouldn't be called?
I think you probably have seen it go either way. I think, you know, unfortunately, with it being inside the box is definitely puts the referee in a decision where he has to make a decision like that. You know, and I think that, yeah, you know, I see where you're coming from and saying it could have gone either way. I don't think that there would have been a huge penalty shout had it not been called,
yeah.
You know, from them. But you've seen them go both ways. But I think at the end of the day, I think Button and our other backs have got it. You can't put the referee in a position where he can make a decision like that. I think
I agree with that.
Avoid that a situation as a whole, then it's no problem. I think that when you put his referee in a situation like that, unfortunately sometimes you're going to get the short end of the stick, and I think that's really what ended up happening.
Okay, very good. Before we talk about the negatives, and obviously there are negatives, you said there are positives, and you've been naming a few of them. I want to ask you about a positive that I think came out of this. Not that you want to see Fulham play with 10 men, but there are going to be situations potentially later on the season that they play with 10 men. I thought they did a very nice job playing with 10 men. Just talk about that. I know we're talking about the fact that they only gave up the one goal, but just being able to play in that style, 10 men, I thought they did fairly well in the second half. I know, obviously, we did not get the equalizer, but I think it's a positive to walk away knowing that you can play with 10 men if you have to.
Right, and obviously, like you said, you never want to find yourself in that situation, but I actually thought we served ourselves pretty well, I think, playing with 10 men. We basically dropped in and played what we had to play and play the way that we needed to play, which was an interesting thing, which we'll get to, I'm sure, with some substitutions that we made. But, I think, to say that, to say that we basically came into a shell with 10 men, I think would be an incorrect statement. I think we continued to play. We continued to look for an equalizer. But obviously when you can't commit as many players forward, it's going to be difficult to create any kind of opportunities. You compare that with the fact that, then they're taking away Kearney's time and space. And then basically you're almost playing with 9.5 men. And they basically were able to play us, with a player on Kearney and take away his space. And then I think the game's completely different if we can get him free. But, I agree. I think we served ourselves well. I think we showed that, even with 10 men, we're not just going to go into a shell and not just, play and try to keep the game at 1-0 and try to play for something, a free kick or whatever. I think we continued to play the game, and I think that's a good sign. I think it's a sign of that we're still going to be aggressive. We're not in games to lose 1-0. We're in games to try to equalize. And so I think that's definitely a positive we could probably take from it.
Okay, very good. Now let's go to the flip side. We started the show talking about things we can learn from this match. What can Fulham learn from the negatives here?
Well, I think that in transition that we're very, very susceptible, especially when we lose the ball in the midfield. I think the red card came from a chance where we had possession of the ball, we lose it quickly, our defenders get caught high and flat, and Maddle had to make a challenge. I think it's one that he has to make, and honestly, I think more times than not, I think you see Maddle actually win that challenge cleanly, but. It was an unfortunate situation. I think that if you go back and look at the replay, I think there is an argument to be made that he was not the last man back, that Kallis was at least even with Maddle, if not behind him. It's a tough thing to do when you end up flat like that, even in transition, you're leaving yourself open for one pass to beat the whole back line. And I think that's what was about to happen. And so I didn't really like the shape of our backs when we were in possession. I felt like we were a little too high and a little too tight. I think we played a little bit too much down the center of the field. I think we've got to be able to spread the ball to the wings, which is what we've been successful at. I think that's something that also Birmingham did very well, is they forced things into the middle and made us play through there. And as compared to letting it get out wide, letting Adoy get forward and overlap and create crosses and crossing opportunities and things like that, which, we weren't very successful at. And so I think what we've got to really probably, the negatives from it is that we weren't able to get the ball out wide. We had to play through the middle, and we weren't able to switch the point of attack very well. When you do that, teams are going to be able to close down space and counterattack very quickly on you.
Okay, excellent stuff there. And I want to talk about one other thing that stood out for me, Matt. I want to get your thoughts because I think this is a negative that you can learn from. When a team gets punched in the mouth, as I would say. It just, you know, just a phrase, punched in the mouth. You know, basically, you're not able to do what you want to do. They're not letting you play. My thought is that Fulham got too hesitant, that they weren't being aggressive enough against a team that was aggressive against them. Did you notice that as well, that they were too hesitant, not confident enough?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that comes from, you know, we were hesitant. I think we were hesitant for good reason, part of the time because of their athleticism up front. But I also think we were hesitant, you know, even coming forward because we were looking for players who are normally in positions where we can go and attack, and were hesitant to get forward because of their ability to counterattack and what they were able to do. And so throughout the game, you kind of saw it even more and more. You saw us even more and more hesitant and more careful with the ball. Almost too careful with the ball, meaning.
Right.
I thought there were some times where there were some opportunities for us to, you know, whether you want to call it ugly ball or lumping it forward or whatever, but there were some times that we had some opportunities to do that and get Matt Smith on the ball, and I just don't think that we were able to do that very successfully.
You know, it's funny you say that. We talked about that on the post-match show. I just said, with the conditions the way they were at Craven Cottage, with all the rain, and the situation of the passing wasn't as crisp as it normally is, why not try something different sometime during the match when you have Matt Smith? Why not play a little long ball? I know no one likes it, but sometimes it's effective, Matt.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the conditions call for different styles of play. I think it's, we're changing the way that we want to play, that we want to be able to build out of the back and possess the ball and dominate possession in the game, which we did. But you look at that and you say, well, that's not really a stat that matters. If you have two thirds of the possession but only have one shot on target, how effective are you with your possession? And so there's possession and there's possession with a purpose. And I think that
right.
kind of comes, you know, back to your point with being, you know, sometimes a little bit hesitant to go forward, a little bit too careful with the ball is how effective was our possession. I'd love to see the stats on how many negative passes or square passes that we made. And it was probably significantly more than passes forward or passes longer than 20 yards. And so, sometimes in order to be able to keep a team, you know, back and team who's pressured, who's you know, closing down spaces and things like that, is you've got to bypass the midfield and you've got to get the ball in their defensive third. And like you said, in conditions like that, anything can happen. A ball can skip through, somebody can slip, something like that. And, you know, you can take advantage of stuff like that. So, you know, to be able to adapt to conditions and things like that, I think is going to be very, very important. And it's something that you would like to have seen a little bit more of.
Okay, excellent. And that's why I wanted to bring that to the table, because, you know, sometimes you have to play how the match is going. And if it's going to be one of these matches, the conditions and the way the team is playing, maybe you need to adjust to what is going on and adjust your game a little bit. We all want them to play attractive football, but sometimes maybe you need to play a little bit differently because that's how the match is going. That's the reason why I wanted to bring that up, and you kind of confirmed my thoughts on that. All right, Matt, let's now go to coaching decisions, and let's start with the first one. Before the match is played, we're looking at the starting 11. So I want to get in the mind of Savisa for you. What do you make of his decision to start Stefan Johansson and Matt Smith to begin the match?
Well, I thought Johansson was an interesting one. I think Matt Smith has been kind of a regular in the starting lineup, and so I'm not sure you really – look at that with any kind of sideways look or anything like that. But Johansson was an interesting one. I know there's a little bit of uncertainty about where Scott Parker was and was he a late scratch or something like that. But, it was interesting to see that. And, you know, it was interesting to see us, you know, we were playing just a kind of a different style with him. And so, you know, I think that, you know, obviously, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and you can always look back and question things like that. But I'm sure that probably in the 2 weeks leading up to the match, he probably had come in and done some good things, and and really been ready to execute. And it may have been a matchup thing. I mean, that's the thing you've got to ask yourself, is there's the matchup. There's something we always talk with our players about how there's horses for courses. There's certain players that I will play that may play very little in certain games because of matchups, that may play 90 minutes in another match because of a certain matchup. So I think that what we thought was going to happen and the way that we thought that they were going to play for maybe our scouting staff was different from what they came out with. But that's what happens over an international break, is that people make changes, and that's what's going to happen when you're a good team. I think that's something different that we're going to have to deal with from last year to this year, is that when you're a successful team and you're on a high and you haven't been beaten in any competition to that point, teams are going to make changes to deal with you, as compared to last year, us having to make more changes to deal with the opponent.
That's a great point.
And so you wonder if possibly we weren't really ready to deal with that, because it's a relatively new thing for us, because in the past 3 or 4 years, it's been us on that side, not the other teams. And so I think that's something that we're going to have to adapt to as well.
That's a great point, because now teams are trying to figure out, well, how do we beat Fulham? How do we take away what they do best to beat them? They're now game planning for us. That's in a different style to take away what we do best. So that goes, again, that goes to some of these decisions, like I said, with Stefan Johansson and Matt Smith. That's why I was curious your thoughts on that. What stuck with talking about Johansson, because Slavica takes him off around 30 minutes and maybe a little bit beyond that, and brings on Yothabed. What were your thoughts when you saw this change?
Well, it's always when you bring in a player, typically in the first half, it is unless it's an obvious injury, it is definitely to change a game plan from which you came into the match. So I think what he saw was with them taking away Kearney, I think we needed somebody a little bit more athletic and somebody a little bit more attack minded and somebody who can get on the ball and create attacks and things like that. So I really think that's probably where that came from, was trying to get somebody else other than, Aluko to be able to drop in and get the ball, somebody for the backs to link up with for us to hopefully create some attacks. And so that's really where I felt that came from. The basically what he was doing is he was playing a chess match. Okay, you're going to take away Kearney. Okay, well then we're going to add Yozabed to come in. And somebody who I feel is a similar player in terms of style to a Kearney. Unfortunately, he's, in my mind, he's not nearly as been effective as Kearney has to this point. So, but I think that's kind of what he was looking to do, was, okay, well, if you're going to take away Kearney, we're going to add in kind of another player similar to that style of play, and see if you can match up with him as well. And then maybe that can open up spaces for some other players to get the ball. So, that's kind of where I felt that came from.
Okay, so it sounds like you understand the mindset of Slavica here. But it didn't seem to work, Matt. I want to give him credit for trying something. And we talked about on the post-match show that it just didn't come off. So why do you think it didn't work?
Well, I think it goes back to what I said. I just don't think he's been as effective in finding space and finding holes and being effective in spreading the ball spreading the ball around. I think one thing Kearney really has done is not only been able to drive at defenses, but he's also been able to find players in good spaces, establish possession, allow our fullbacks to get forward, and really be able to play off and combine with other players. I think Yozabed is actually somebody who deals with a little bit more space of running at people a little bit more than maybe his passing ability and his ability to be more of a facilitator. And that's what, Kearney inside the attacking third is as good as anybody in terms of going to goal and having, creating chances for himself and things like that. But I think that also what Kearney has added to his game is the ability to be a true center midfielder, and really be a facilitator at times, especially in the middle third. Whereas Yozabed, I don't think has developed that side of his game, and I think that's something that he's going to have to develop, and if other teams end up trying to take away Kearney.
Okay, very good, Matt. I'm sorry, I forgot to ask you one part of the Johansson situation. We were talking last night on the post match show. Two of my co-hosts mentioned this. Johansson goes along with McDonald because Parker isn't available. So two of my co-hosts brought up a name of a player. This is to start the match. I understand the substitution, the reasoning now that you think that Slavisa went with Yotha by bringing him on. Two of my co-hosts brought up Ryan Tunnicliffe instead of Stefan Johansson, who just came in with the team. Even though Ryan Tunnicliffe, at times, I could see why he's not necessary, but in certain matches, against certain teams, they brought up Tunnicliffe as a potential partner for McDonald rather than Johansson. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's a great point. I actually had to go back when Yozabed came in. I actually had to go back and make sure that I saw correctly that Tunnicliffe was on the bench, because I was thinking, you know, the exact same thing. So, you know, I think that Tunnicliffe could have been a good option. I think that he's played well. I think he's you know, may have been you know, obviously, again, it's easy to say now, but I think that he may have been the one that is more established, like you said, more established in the side and is maybe able to link up with some players a little bit more effectively. So I think it's a great point. I think that's probably, you know, what Slavisa, you know, did with going with Yozabed over Tunnicliffe. I'm sure there was probably a reason there, but it's probably, honestly, in my mind, probably was a coin flip. You know, do we go with Tunnicliffe or do we go with Yozabed? And, you know, and maybe it came up tails, and it was, maybe the coin flip came up tails and he went with Yozabed. But I think that it was definitely, you know, another good option that we had. And I actually, to be honest with you, I actually expected Tunnicliffe to come in towards the end. Anyway, you know, unfortunately we weren't able to do that with a red card and then with another substitution. But, you know, I think that they make a very, very good point that, you know, maybe Tunnicliffe would have been the better option, you know, in terms of his, you know, just the time that he spent with the club and the kind of the comfort level that I think other players might have with him.
Right. That's the reason why my co-hosts were bringing that up last night. You know, the comfort. And also, you know, being around McDonald a little bit longer than maybe Yothabed, you know, losing Scott Parker for someone like McDonald might have affected him. So why not have someone that's been around the club a little bit longer, like Tunnicliffe, that knows how Slavisa wants to play, and he's box to box. And you know, I was, when they both brought that up, I was like, you know what, that makes sense. But he went, like you said, he went with Yothabed. And unfortunately, it didn't work in this match. But because I can see in certain situations, Matt, Tunnicliffe can be effective. I don't want to see him in the starting 11 on a regular basis. But against certain opponents, maybe against someone like Birmingham City, maybe he would have worked. But Slavisa knows better than us, and his coaching staff know better than us. So he decided not to go with Tunnicliffe. All right. Last thing I want to talk about, a coaching decision that I found very interesting, and I've said this on several occasions. Not all coaches will take blame for a loss. Well, Slavisa put the blame of this loss all upon himself, which I find interesting. It's admirable. I want to give him credit for that. What are your thoughts about quotes from him after the match? He put it upon himself, Matt.
I think that, like you said, it's admirable. I think it's something that what it shows is the faith that he has in his players. And, you know, I think that in the past we've seen some of our managers put the losses on players and things like that. And I don't think that does anything for their confidence. And it shouldn't. This loss honestly shouldn't shake our confidence. It should, you know, I think Slavisa probably put it on him, number one. I think he's probably maybe making a little bit of an admission of some mis-substitutions, like what we just talked about, I think, with possibly Yozabed instead of Tunnicliffe, possibly taking off Matt Smith towards the end of the match. You know, could have been another one of those. I think that, you know, something that you and I talked about before was I found it very odd that when we took off Matt Smith, that then we started playing more balls longer into those channels, which is where Matt Smith kind of feeds off of. And so I felt that that was a little bit of an odd substitution. So I think that what he's saying is he's holding his hand up and saying, hey, we weren't prepared to deal with the adaptation that they were going to make to the way we played. We didn't make the right changes at the right times as a coaching staff. And, you know, we're going to learn from it just as the players can learn from things. The coaches can learn from things as well. You know, I think that's something that, that really just gives me a little bit more respect for him as a manager. And I think that, you know, knowing him and knowing how hard that he works and how passionate he is about every game that we go into, I have a feeling that, that he's going to right that wrong and be able to move forward and make us better. And you know, I think as managers, what we're always looking for is how we can get better. I think somebody, you know, a manager who sits there and think and knows, not even thinks, but knows he knows it all, you know, isn't going to be able to improve and isn't going to be able to help this team improve. And so I think that's something you've got to really take and really have some respect for Sylvester for coming forward with.
See, I agree with you 100%. A manager, coach, head coach, whatever you want to call him, that takes it upon himself and that can be big enough to say, you know what, I didn't get this right. I'm not going to blame my players. I'm blaming myself. That also tells me what you just said. He's going to figure out what he did wrong in this match and apply it to the next match and the next match and the next match. It's learning from your mistakes. And that, to me, is the biggest thing to take out of taking personal blame here, is that he will learn from this. You know, he knows he made mistakes here, and he's going to learn from them and try to correct them. That, to me, is a good sign. I don't like when I see managers that don't take personal responsibility. And there are some over the years with many teams that I follow that don't take any responsibility, that will throw it upon their players. Well, you can, you know, everyone has a piece of the blame pie when you lose. But I do like when a manager puts it upon himself and say, you know what, I'm putting this on me, and I'm going to fix it. Sylvester didn't come out and say he was going to fix it, but that to me is what's implied here. He's going to learn from his mistakes, Matt, and that's, to me, is a very positive sign for Fulham moving forward with the attitude of Sylvester Jokanović taking personal responsibility for this loss. I actually liked that a great deal. All right, my friend, let's now transition. Let's look forward, because Fulham have a very important match tomorrow night. So we're going to be doing the preview. I'm not doing a separate preview show. This will be acting as the preview for Cottage Talk. So what I'm going to do right now is going to share some information with you from WhoScored.com to give you some background on Burton Albion, and then we're going to talk a little bit about them and how Fulham can potentially win this match. So here's some information from WhoScored.com. Let's start with the table here. Fulham are currently sixth, and they have 3 wins, 2 draws, 1 loss. They've scored 7. They've only given up 5 for a +2 goal differential, and Fulham are currently on 11 points. Like I said, we are 6. Burton Albion are currently 14th. They're 2-2-2. They've scored 11. They've given up 10. They're on a +1 goal differential, and they are on 8 points. Now, according to WhoScored.com, their probable lineup formation will be a 3-5-2, so keep that in mind. Their strengths, attacking down the wings, very strong. Also very strong at coming back from losing positions and very strong at creating scoring chances. Strong at attacking set pieces, finishing scoring chances, stealing the ball from the opposition in aerial duels. Their weaknesses, they are weak at keeping possession of the ball, defending against skillful players. They're very weak at defending set pieces. Their style play, attempt crosses often, take a lot of shots, long balls, control the game in the opposition's half, attacking down the right, they have a consistent first 11, non-aggressive, and they play the offside trap. Okay. And here's a statistical comparison in several categories between Fulham and Burton Albion. Again, I got this from WhoScored.com. Let's start with possession. In the league, Fulham are currently second, averaging 56.7%. Burton Albion are 18th at 47.1%. I'm sorry, 47%. Passing success. Fulham are first in the league, 84.7%. Burton Albion are 20th at 68.4%. Aerials won. Fulham are 16th at 18.3%. Burton Albion are 5th at 24.5%. Shots per game. Fulham are 8th with 13.2. Burton Albion are 4th with 14.8. Now we'll go with some passing stats. Short passes per game. Fulham are 1st with 475. Burton Albion at 21st with 246. Long balls per game. Fulham are 11th with 79. Burton Albion are 2nd with 69. Oh, I'm sorry, 22nd. I think I might have gotten that backwards. I apologize. I think it's Burton Albion that are 11th and Fulham are 22nd with long balls. So I apologize for that. I got those stats backwards there, Matt. Fulham are first with through balls at 3 per game, and Burton Albion don't average any per game, and they are 21st. Crosses per game, Fulham are 13th with 20, and Burton Albion are first with 27 per game. So there are a couple stats that Burton Albion are pretty high in, and there are a couple stats that Fulham are high in. All right, my friend, I give you a bunch of information comparing Fulham and also Burton Albion. What are your thoughts about what I shared before we get into the preview?
Well, I think looking at their player stats on their website, I'm looking at, obviously playing a 3-5-2, they are very midfield dominated. I'm looking at their player stats with this, their goals, and of all the goals that they've scored, only two have come from strikers. Their top three leading goal scorers, eight of their goals have come from midfielders. Nine of their goals have come from midfielders. I think that's something that we're going to have to really be aware of. And I think that, when you say how many, long balls they tend to play and crosses that they tend to play, those are typically probably pulled back to midfielders running on and getting beyond the forwards. And so I think defensively we're going to have to be very aware in the midfield. Possibly see us maybe playing two defensive center mids and one attacking again. And we're going to have to be very aware of that. In terms of just shots, in shots, they're the striker has the most shots, has two shots total in the league. Their first four top shot takers are all midfielders. So they're not afraid to shoot from range, obviously. And obviously I think those midfielders are going to look to get beyond the forwards and look to be in dangerous places. And so I think that's something that we're really going to have to be aware of is the battle in the midfield may be crucial to winning this game. If they play a high line with a 3-5-2, I could see this actually, off the top of your head, it would say, well, maybe this is a game for Matt Smith to be able to play the long ball and to get in behind, but that's not really his game. So you may see, maybe some of our more athletic players look to play the ball through on the ground to be able to get behind their defense. But, it is a team that, this is always what happens with teams that just come up into the league. Every time they go to a ground that is a famous ground like the Cottage, they're going to be ready to play. They're going to have their A game. They're going to have their, they know that they're going to have to play their best game of the season in order to get points. And I'm sure Nigel Clough is going to play the card of, nobody respects us. It's us against the rest of the league. And, nobody thinks that we can do anything, but, to play probably a very physical style and to get balls into the box and hopefully that we can deal with that. And, we have been, knock on wood, we have been relatively successful at dealing with things like that. And hopefully that we can get some set pieces and take advantage of what one of their weaknesses is. So, but the battle in the midfield, especially in the center midfield, I think is going to be, definitely a big one. I think Tom Naylor is their key player and, leads them in shots and leads them in goals, I believe, as well. So, we're going to have to definitely key on him and not only that, but make them have to defend a little bit and keep them in their end and, make it hard for them to get behind us and get in good crossing positions.
Okay, great analysis there, Matt. And the one thing that I do want to mention, because I was reading in a good amount about Burton Albion this morning and also watching some video, and they recently played a 1-1 draw with Wolves, and they played fairly well. And the one thing when I'm reading about them is that this isn't a team that's going to sit back. This is a team that's going to come at us, and they're not afraid to come at us. They certainly did that against Wolves. So expect that. Like you said, they're playing 3-5-2. They are going to try to get crosses in the box. So that's something to expect in this match. All right, With all that said, I'm curious, who are your key players for Fulham tomorrow? It sounds like the central midfield pair would be key, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be very, very important that, you know, do we see Scott Parker back? I think this could be a game for him if he's fit and ready to go. I think McDonald is going to be a very, very important player. You could possibly see him track Naylor a decent amount. I think that also, you know, if they do end up playing the long ball and getting the ball in our defensive third and really coming at us and things like that, I think, you know, Kearney finding good spaces in the gap between their midfield and their backs could be very, very important. So, I really think that from what I'm seeing, I don't think there's any doubt that the midfield pairing of the two or the three, and then plus Aluko possibly dropping in and finding balls, in spaces and behind so that we can run at their defense. And, like you said, and one of their weaknesses was defending skillful players. And I think Aluko
yep.
and even Aite could be very, very crucial to what we do. And can we get our wingbacks forward? Can we get, Adoy forward? Can Scott Malone continue to play in an attacking style like we need him to, until Fredericks gets back? So, you know, if we're able to do that kind of stuff, and if we can win, I think if we win the battle in the center of the midfield, I think we can go on to win this game comfortably. I think if we allow them to control the pace of the game and allow them to press us and we can't handle their center midfielders and their wingers, I think it may be a battle.
Okay, very good. So you made it clear. To win this match, because I was just going to ask you, to win that, you were talking about the key players, but you really went into how to win this match. It's really controlling the play from central midfield, not allowing them to control the play. If we can control the play, get it to players like Aluko and Kearney, then we could, I'm not saying have our way, but we can control the play, Matt. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but that's basically what Fulham need to do tomorrow.
I agree. I think if you see Aluko and Kearney be able to get the ball and run at their backs, I think we're going to be very, very successful. I think if they have to come back deep to receive the ball off our back line, or McDonald have to receive the ball and then link up there, I think it may be a little bit more difficult, because I could see what they would do against our formation is possibly pinch in those outside midfielders to really clog space in the midfield. But if we can find – if you see Aluko and Kearney being able to run at their defense, then I think that we could really, really cause trouble for them. So that's definitely something to look for.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. All right. All right, let's move on to your starting 11. I'm curious what you would do if you were Slavisa with a starting 11. It sounds like it would be a very solid defensive midfield pairing. But beyond that, I'm curious who you're going to have up front. Are you going to have Matt Smith? Are you going to have Chris Martin? Give me your overall starting 11 here, what you would do.
I think that this could be a match for Chris Martin. I think that when he came on towards the end, he showed some things. He showed that he was able to come back for the ball a little bit and be able to combine with Aluko. I think that's something that you could see. I think that the obvious big question is who plays center back in place of Maddle. How are we going to deal with that? Could you see Tim Ream? Who else are you going to see there at center half? So I think that's going to be the big question, but I still think you see Malone and Adoy on the outside, given everybody's fit. I think you still see Callis. I think that what you'll see is you'll see Parker if he's healthy. If not, you may see Tunnicliffe, tomorrow. You may see somebody else. I think that Johansson, may have played himself back onto the bench, and possibly of no fault of his own, but just possibly something that we've got to do in terms of matchups. I think you're still going to see McDonald.
Right.
I still think you're going to see Kearney, with Aite and Aluko and up front. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he starts Matt Smith again, but I think this could be a game for Chris Martin. I think that I really think, you and I haven't talked since he came in, but I really think that could be a very good pickup in terms of, when Woodrow's completely fit and ready to go, and Martin and us having multiple options at striker now off the bench, I think that you possibly could see Martin play in this game.
Okay, let's talk about the defense, because they're going to be missing Michael Maddle. Who's going to be taking the place of Michael Maddle? Will it be Sigurdsson?
That's I think is the that's the question of the day. I think there's a number of options that we could possibly go with. I would not be surprised if you saw Sigurdsson. I actually was lucky enough, or unlucky enough, whichever way you want to put it. I actually saw him play in the Euros. I was at the England-Iceland game, and was actually very impressed with him, with Sigurdsson, and thought that he handled the pace of the game and things like that very well. I think that's something that you could definitely see alongside Kallis. And I think Maddle's going to be a big miss, not only from just his play, but I think from his leadership and things like that. I think that's something that that we're really going to miss. But I think he's ready to have a look, and I think he is a very, very good player. I think that he actually, although in some ways relatively unknown besides the Euros, I think that he's shown that he can play at that level, and he can play against the top players in England. And obviously none of those players for Burton Albion were playing for England that day, and I thought he held himself quite well. So I would not be surprised at all if you see him. He's also somebody who's very, very dangerous on set pieces. That may be something that we look into in terms of bringing him in is set pieces, in our attacking set pieces. Somebody he's very good at getting on the end of those, and really is really a hard-nosed, kind of no-nonsense player. I love the way that he played in that match, although obviously I had some rooting interest for England in that game. But, I think that he could be a good replacement. And, I hope that we don't miss the leadership of Maddle. That's why I hope that if we can have Scotty Parker back, that would be perfect to have the leadership at that kind of holding center mid role, with Maddle being gone.
Okay, and how about your fullbacks? Last match, in several matches, we had Dennis Adoy at right back, and left back has been going back and forth between Scott Malone and Ryan Sessegnon. Is this a match for Scott Malone again, or is this a Ryan Sessegnon type of match?
I think it could be. I think it could be a game for Sessegnon. I think that, with them only playing two up front and him having to defend, and him basically, his defensive role will primarily be the midfielder on that side, which will be a little bit more, not as advanced as maybe if they were playing a 4-3-3. And so that may actually give him room to run, which is something that we've seen, that he can be very, very dangerous coming forward and running at people and using his athleticism. So, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Sessegnon, Sigurdsson, Kallis, and Adoy in the back. And, it'd be a very, very exciting – it could be a very end-to-end game. So it could be a very exciting match at the Cottage tomorrow night. And, I think if you're looking for a game to bounce back and to really come out at home and to really put people under pressure, I think that maybe you do go with him.
It's a good take, because I was thinking about it while you were saying, listen, they're playing a 3-5-2. He might be the perfect elixir for that formation because of his ability to go forward. So I think I think Ryan Sessegnon could be a good fit in this match. But Scott Malone has played well. Scott Malone has played well, Matt. It's tough because I could see him going to Scott Malone, but Ryan Sessegnon, this might – I agree with you. It just might be the matchup might be better for him. But
it is, and I think Scott Malone has served himself well. I think a lot of people were down on him. I think he's actually played better than expected. But I think Sessegnon, with his pace and his ability to get forward, may be even able to pin that right midfielder, back even further to not allow them to attack up that side. And possibly cause them some trouble in terms of even counterattacking up that side, because Sessegnon is pushing that player so far back defensively.
That's a wonderful point. I'll be curious to see what Savica does tomorrow. And I'm assuming Button in goal?
I would think so. I think that he's played well. I don't think he's done anything to really lose his job. I think that you're going to see him learn from that mistake. It's something that really, honestly, I've seen him do before. I've seen him take it maybe a touch too many with his feet before. Even when he was at Brentford, I saw a couple matches where sometimes he got himself in trouble and his team in trouble doing that. But I think it's something he's going to learn from, and to be safe and smart, especially against a 3-5-2. You could see us try to to really try to get the ball forward and be really safe and get the ball to our wingers and move forward instead of, you know, having to play up the middle so much as Birmingham was making us.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, it's time to go to predictions. I actually put up a quick poll on the Cotter Talk Facebook page. And Facebook, boy, I have Goldmans after Goldmans. First with the long balls, now with this. On the Cotter Talk Twitter page, I had 140 votes. Win, 78%. Draw, 13%. And loss, 9%. So the Fulham supporters on the poll, definitely looking for a victory there, my friend. What's your prediction for the match Tuesday night?
I guess when we go to your prediction, you're not allowed to say 3-0 with a hat trick to Ross McCormick anymore, are you?
No, but it's funny, Matt. It's funny that you said that because I was thinking of David Holly as we were just talking about. Should I go for Chris Martin now for a hat trick? But I don't want to drive David nuts.
Yeah, but I think if in the position we're in and how we've been playing, this is a game we should win. This is a game that, you know, at home, coming off a loss, can we bounce back? Can we come out and really attack a team who's, you know, below us in the table? Let's bounce back and let's, you know, Slavisa, I'm sure, is going to be as motivated as ever, especially after his comments after the game of getting this one right and getting the players right and ready to go and focused and ready to have a game plan to execute. I see us winning this game 2-3-1. I'm not sure that with Maddle out, I'm not sure with how much that they're going to press us off crosses and things like that maybe we can keep a clean sheet. But, you know, and it's always hard to predict. For me, it's hard to predict a clean sheet against a team, in a game that I think is going to be pretty end-to-end. But I see us winning this game, you know, probably, you know, 3-1 will be my official prediction. One for Chris Martin, one for Aluko, and I'm going to go one off a set piece for Sigurdsson if he plays.
That's great. Okay, I'm going to go with you. I wrote down 3-1. But I don't want this to be bad luck. So I'm not predicting a hat trick by anyone ever again because it never worked for me. So I'm not doing that. I'm going to say Kearney. I'm going to say Chris Martin. And I'm going to say Floyd Ayite is going to score. So I'm going to spread it out. All right, my friend, we only have 2 minutes left. And any final thoughts before we go?
No, we're just ready to see us bounce back, ready to get back. And, you know, again, I think there's still a lot of positives we can take from this match. Haven't given away a goal through the run of play, even with 10 men against Birmingham, who I think are a very good team. You know, I think Nigel Clough is going to have his team ready to go, but it's something that this is a game that we need to win. And if this is a team that we really think can push for a playoff spot or even higher than that, you know, then this is a game that you have to take control of straight away and really come out and show your worth and come out with a good win.
Okay, very good, Matt. My final thought goes to a theme that I've been having. It's about the response. How are Fulham going to respond to a loss? Well, we're going to find out. You know, let's see how they react to this. If they come out and take care of business, then maybe we can get on a roll again because I'd like to see them string a couple of victories in a row. So let's start here. Let's see what they do against Burton Albion. But, Matt, as always, thank you so much for doing this with me. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, I love it. Always love it, man. Always love talking Fulham. And like you said, ready to see us bounce back, and can't wait to see you again.
Okay, very good. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, Russ. Boys and girls.